Good day, everyone. My name is March Twisdale, and you're listening to my 2019 Encore series of prose, poetry, and purpose. This show was recorded in the studios of Voice of Vashon and airs at 11 a.m. every Saturday and 12 noon every Monday on your favorite station, 101.9 FM KVSH. Thank you for making Voice of Vashon and Prose, Poetry, and Purpose a part of your day. On a more personal note, in December 2018, I lost my dad, and to celebrate everything that he meant to me, my 2019 Encore series is dedicated not so much to his memory, but to his success as a parent. For 46 years, my dad inspired me in countless ways, and so each Encore presentation will also include a short story about my dad and end with some of my dad's favorite music. Today, I'd like to talk about furniture. Not the first topic that comes to mind when thinking about inspiration, but for me, my dad's furniture, or the lack of it, had a lasting impact on my life. When I was born, for example, my dad suggested that I simply sleep in his homemade dresser drawer. Who needs a crib? He reasoned. Of course, when you're moving constantly, who needs stuff in general? But even if you aren't constantly moving, who needs stuff? From a young age, I learned the words that described my dad's opinion on stuff: anti-consumerism and anti-materialism. I was thinking about those words when I was in elementary school. And this month, when I go down to Arizona to pack up the last of my dad's stuff, I've got to say, I'm going to have a much easier time than most, as there is truly very little of it. Yet still, I am presented with a predicament. I learned from my dad to be frugal with stuff. There is what you want, because society tells you to want it, and what you actually want, followed by what you need. Do I need the three beautiful planks of wood that, along with four square cement blocks, have been my dad's epically movable shelves for close to 40 years? Do I need his table made of golden pine and the one remaining chair with its curved wooden back? And so on. Of course, in my dad's house, we mostly lived on carpet. Rental apartment carpet is awesome stuff. And I have to tell you, there's just about nothing so grand and relaxing and comfortable as sitting on the ground. Memories of my dad sitting in that one chair are limited to my memories of him working, while images of my dad relaxing are all related to him lying on his side, a cup of something to drink beside him, staring off into space, thinking. In fact, the one thing I most regret about my home today is that it has no carpet. Of course, I have pets and live on a farm, so carpet would be a nightmare, but still, I miss the floor. As is the case with all parents, we do not teach with our words. We teach with our actions. And what I took away from my childhood home was an instinctual preference for sparseness and thrift that has shaped my life both figuratively and literally. When I first moved out, I owned almost nothing by choice, and certainly not furniture. When I would move, as I often did, another habit I learned from my parents, it took maybe 4 hours to pack up everything I owned, and the smallest U-Haul trailer was way too big. Even later, when I became a mother, I was amazed at the huge swaths of toys that would slowly consume the homes of my friends. Comparatively, my kids were starved for physical toys. But their lives were rich in experiences, reflecting my lifelong habit of prioritizing activities over things. When I was a teenager, you'd be hard-pressed to talk me into buying an object with my few hard-earned dollars. So, yeah, maybe I did end up co-sleeping with my kids, which was one of the top three best decisions of my life. But even if I hadn't, who needs a crib? Just pull out that drawer. Today, I've invited Sam Karp to join me on the show. He joined our island 18 months ago as an AmeriCorps Vista service member. Sam, welcome.
It's good to be here, March.
So, folks, let's see here. I'm going to ask Sam to give you a real quick sense of sort of who he is, and then we're going to dive into a show that is going to go so many places. I'm super excited about our list of topics to cover. So, Sam, ground yourself for our audience. Give them a little sense of who you are.
I've been living on Vashon for about a year now, a little bit more. And essentially, I'm an AmeriCorps Vista who has been placed with the Vashon Mora Community Food Bank and the Food Access Partnership. Essentially, my official position is the Harvest for Vashon Program Coordinator. So I am running a few programs in partnership with the Food Bank here on Vashon, as well as the Food Access Partnership, who have started this partnership to try to help alleviate food insecurity and food waste here on the island.
And I like the food waste being a part of that too.
It's a big deal.
The often unnoticed or unrecognized side of the issue.
Totally, it's right. Often
Yeah.
underground.
What demographic of people is it like really appealing for and useful for? Just sort of go with that.
That's good. Those are two things that I could definitely speak to. Essentially, AmeriCorps is, I like to describe it as sort of the Peace Corps, but just for the United States of America. And so what happens is you can be placed all across the country for a range of different organizations and issues, but essentially you're always placed in an organization to try to help address poverty in some way, with educators, with activists, with organizations that do things like the food bank here does on the island, which has helped to destigmatize using food service programs, a range of other issues really as well.
Poverty issues within,
Within the whole country, yes, that's right. So you'd be working in
including the
Alaska,
territories
Hawaii.
like Puerto Rico and stuff like
The
that.
territories I'm not so sure about. I can only
Okay.
speak to the people that I have met so far, and so far I have not met an AmeriCorps service member who has been working in the territories. I have met members who have been working in Hawaii and Alaska.
The first thought that sort of comes to mind for me when I heard about Peace Corps, for example, when I was younger, you're like, wow, it's a great idea. And then I would have this sense that it was hard to get into the Peace Corps. Or for the Peace Corps, I think oftentimes people said it was helpful or necessary to already have a college degree and things like that. So accessibility didn't feel like super there. So
Totally.
how is that accessibility piece with the AmeriCorps?
Oh, that's so interesting. So AmeriCorps is very much like the Peace Corps in that it's a federal program that seeks to send out service members to help address specific issues, in this case, poverty, in different regions of the country. However, I would say that it is, if you're looking to become a member of AmeriCorps, it is much more accessible than the Peace Corps. Because there is, I would say, a lot more opportunity. There is not just AmeriCorps, there is also other organizations like Food Corps, and then there's also another organization that helps to address the environment. There are different kinds of corps all across the country that are addressing different issues, and there are also positions in every state just looking for active service members to come and help out. And so I would say that there are more positions available in AmeriCorps compared to the Peace Corps.
And you don't have to be a college grad.
To speak to the demographics of those who join AmeriCorps, it is a range of ages and all types of people who can join. I would say that the majority of people who I've met so far, probably close to 100 different kinds of AmeriCorps, active AmeriCorps members now, have been in their early 20s to 30s. However, you may join AmeriCorps so long as you are over the age of 18.
Right. Okay, so this is cool because one of those things that we hear about, one of those stereotypes, and oftentimes a stereotype has a basis in reality, is the person who retires from their job and their work life perhaps really defined also some of their social life, their self-worth, their daily schedule, and then suddenly poof, that's gone. And after, I don't know, so many months of playing golf, they're bored to tears and they're
Totally.
like, what am I gonna do, right? But what if you also wanted to travel, or what if you wanted to go to another place and be involved, in a different way? So this is a great outlet for the happy, healthy, young, retired person.
Certainly, yeah, I think it's an amazing experience for somebody who is looking to get out of their comfort zone a little bit, become more involved in a totally new community, but are also looking to have a little bit of support along the way because AmeriCorps does provide a biweekly stipend or a living allowance, as they call it. And then they also provide at the end of your service ship, whenever that may be, because there's different amounts of time that you could be a service member for, you can either get a cash stipend or an education stipend that goes towards future education that you might want to pursue.
I'm wondering, do they at all allow families to participate?
They are incredibly supportive of a person who wishes to work for an organization that's sponsored by AmeriCorps who has a family.
Right. And so this is potentially a reskilling opportunity.
Right, certainly true. And I should say that there are, like I said before, different kinds of ways to get involved in AmeriCorps because within the AmeriCorps Corporation, there are different branches. And so I technically am an AmeriCorps Vista, which means that I am serving in a role that is largely meant to help address capacity issues, whereas there are other AmeriCorps branches that are much more so on the ground and they involve much more field work or physical labor. One of those is AmeriCorps NCCC. NCCC members travel as a group and they'll travel across a certain region. So I just met a team of NCCC members who had just come up from Oregon to Washington, and they had already been to, I think, three of the different states throughout the West and Northwest. And what they were doing was they were staying with different organizations for a matter of weeks and either camping out or staying in places that the organization had ready for them.
Well, when I was checking out the website, one of the things I noticed, there were a couple of like sort of highlighted topics, and one of them was talking about how the AmeriCorps had been sort of called into service in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence.
Totally.
Yeah, so it's almost sort of, yeah, exactly. So obviously there's a diversity of what is offered by AmeriCorps.
That's right. And the NCCC members who I actually met were called down to Houston, I believe, to help address the emergency relief that was needed down there while they were serving. And so they were called down from whatever project they were working on and went down to Houston for a few weeks to help with different projects down there and then came back to their project once they were done.
When you're 18, 19, you're not expected to have all the experience and wisdom of someone who's 47. You are a baby adult. Welcome to adulthood. Here we go. So for someone like that who is not yet just filled with a burning desire to get a specific degree in college or to pursue a specific, path forward in the trades or whatever. And they're like, I am not exactly sure, but I'd like to see more of my country. I want to travel and I want to get to know myself. Because when you travel, you get to know who you are more. AmeriCorps would be like literally a paid way to do those things. And at the end, you've got either quote savings, which is that chunk of money at the end, or you have created the capacity to go to college if you don't right now have $7,000 to $10,000 to throw down on college classes every year.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think that especially for a young person who's coming out of high school and looking to make the next step and not quite sure what that is, AmeriCorps or serving in AmeriCorps is a great way to learn about how to make connections in new communities where you don't know anybody, how to learn about different ways of life. In communities where the cultures might be totally different than the ones that you're used to where you grew up. And then it's also a great way just to sort of take a gap year and experience the world and get to know the country and
And
challenge
job
yourself a little bit.
skills.
And absolutely, you'll learn job skills and you'll especially learn what it's like to work for a nonprofit organization or whatever organization you will be placed with. For sure. And I would say that you'll be surprised to find the amount of positions available in the area that you're already living in. And so if you are a young person or a person of any age who is looking to just be supportive for a little while and wants to give back to their community, and also wants to learn a little bit more about a specific issue, especially in its relation to poverty and how to address poverty in a certain way, go online and look through the AmeriCorps website and try to find some positions that are nearby because just working here for about a year and getting connected with other AmeriCorps members, I've found about three or four positions. Just in the Seattle area alone, where people are looking for folks to apply.
Awesome. Okay, so where did you come from?
That's a good question. So I grew up in the Bay Area, in Palo Alto in particular, and I moved to Washington when I went to school, to university. And so I went to University of Puget Sound, just across the water in Tacoma, and there I got a double major in anthropology and environmental studies with an emphasis sort of in food waste and food security. And so once I graduated in 2017, I was really interested in learning a little bit more about sustainable food systems and small-scale farming in particular. And so funny enough, Vashon is a bit of a hub for small-scale farming and organic agriculture. And when I was at school, my class had taken a field trip to a small farm on the island called Green Man Farm, which is owned by Jasper and Will Forrester. and I loved it. And I, when I was looking for the next step, I contacted them seeking an internship and got it, and ended up staying with them for about 3 months, learning about small-scale biodynamic agriculture.
And they collect a lot of water, I think, there, too.
They do, yeah.
I've seen the farm once, and I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, their farm is really incredible because they are very efficient at saving water. They've got amazing figs. Yeah, that's right.
The story behind why the figs are so good.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, it really is incredible what Jasper and Will do over there. But so I was lucky to have the internship there for as long as I did. And then after that, I really didn't have any plans to stay on Vashon past October because I started my position in July and I thought it'd be time to take the next step. And while I was here, a position opened up here at the food bank that just so happened to be sponsored by AmeriCorps. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the start of my journey about learning more about AmeriCorps and what it would be like to work with a nonprofit organization. Each AmeriCorps Vista service membership, they're a year long each.
Okay.
As opposed to other branches of AmeriCorps. And once you're done, if the position goes really well, then your host organization can offer you the position for a second year, or you could, of course, opt to move on to something else and they mm-hmm. will look for another person to take on that position. And while my experience here on Vashon has been exactly what I wanted after mm-hmm. school, and while this position here at the food bank and with the Food Access Partnership has been absolutely perfect for me and what my interests are, I think it's time to move on to another community to learn about sort of other cultures and how other people live.
Right. And do you have a sense of where that's going to be yet?
I know that I want to be working with food systems and hunger and food insecurity and food justice mm-hmm. and food waste, a lot of different things for the rest of my life, all having to do with food. but I am not quite sure yet where that's going to be.
Yeah. Anyways. All right, cool. So, all right. Thank you so much for helping us understand better how AmeriCorps sort of works. And it's just, I am increasingly hopeful and inspired and confident that young people actually have opportunities that are real and legitimate. Because you can sometimes feel like there's only one opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, go to college, your life is going to suck is sort of a general sense that people
right.
get.
Or that you have to be one kind of person to get a certain kind of opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know when I was looking at the AmeriCorps website and they had some pictures of all these people, you know, different ages, different, you know, looks, different genders, different everything all
totally.
Over the place. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more closer to home then.
Sweet.
In particular, I think what would be nice, given that you have also a lot of theoretical background, you know, mm-hmm. on the issues related to food justice, let's go with that as like an umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways in which people view something along the lines of a food bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you mentioned there's sort of a general desire across the board with the people who are here on the island to alter the stigma, the social stigma that can be associated with programs that are designed to help people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say sort of along the lines of that issue here specific to our community on Vashon?
Mm-hmm. The stigmatization of using social service programs, and in particular food relief programs here on the island, but then all across the country, is essentially that you're going to be judged for using a social service program.
So I personally used the food bank for a number of months in a row last mm-hmm. year when I hit some financial walls and realized I simply didn't have what it took to be buying my own food for a few months in a row. And I felt really, really great, unbelievably happy every time I went to the food bank. And the reason I felt so good about it was because I have a personal worldview that people helping people is the way our species thrives.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to live a lifestyle where I'm oftentimes the person who's actually reaching out and helping. And in this situation, I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And really nice, sweet, generous, kind people were right there ready to help me out.
Mm-hmm.
But I was aware at the time that I was doing it that culturally, the average American viewpoint would look upon me in a judgmental or negative way
mm-hmm.
because I was not yet the person who had lost her house, lost her car, lost her savings, and was living in a tent in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had not completely fallen apart and I was there accepting help while still owning a home and a car, and I would be viewed as maybe taking advantage of a system. What is going on in this country around destigmatizing people helping people?
Mm-hmm.
And how is this maybe an issue directly here on Vashon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you're right. It is an issue that's trying to be addressed in communities all over the country because all communities are interacting with food stigmatization in the same way. And I love that you brought up your own personal experience with the food bank here on Vashon March, because your personal experience is actually an experience that many people do have. One of the most consistent comments we get from new customers here at the food bank is that they don't want to take too much because they feel like somebody else deserves this food or needs this food more than they do. And while that is an incredibly admirable way to think, it's also an issue because we want people to feel like they deserve this food. They deserve the food that we are supplying for them. We are here for everyone in the community, not just those who are living with very few resources, but those who perhaps are just finding themselves in a tough situation. And so even if you are working a couple of different jobs and you feel like you are mostly on your feet, if you think that getting relief from the food bank and receiving groceries from the food bank for a number of weeks will help you with making that car payment or buying those shoes for your kids or helping to pay for that program that will help teach your child how to dance or something like that. That's what we're here for. We're here to provide support in many different ways, not just as a way to help you when you are at the lowest of the lows, but to make sure that you can stay productive and that you can address other issues that are in your life, because being hungry isn't the only issue that we face, right? There are all these other issues that we have to deal with. And as a food bank, we want to make sure that we are not just providing the community with food, but with moral support and with agency to address other issues that are going on in their lives. And that is something that food banks and hunger relief agencies all across Washington State and the rest of the country are trying to address as well in their own specific way, because all communities are different. They have different racial makeups, different economic makeups, and because of that, and different geographical makeups as well, which is really important. And because of that, they have to address the issues they face in different ways.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, there are many ways to achieve food security, and human beings have been dealing with the question of food security since they first started calling themselves human beings.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of agriculture in and of itself is grounded in a desire for food security, a desire to be able to control the production and the access of food mm-hmm. resources, rather than hoping that when you make that 10-mile trek to the place where you've always been able to find those berries, you know, that the berries will still be there, you know. So we left the hunter-gatherer lifestyle, moved into something that essentially is all around food security.
Mm-hmm.
So we have gleaning programs on the island, mm-hmm. and there's all these other sort of human cooperation schemes that are designed to increase the growth of food on the island, going to the farmer's market in order to make sure that the local farmers are able to make a living doing what they're doing so they can expand their fields and get to the point, I would say, where if the ferry is shut down for a few weeks for a disaster or longer because of social problems, we're not all starving within, you know, 9 days, but we actually have food resources all over the island.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the top two or three things that are going on the island, maybe that are outside of the purview of the food bank,
mm-hmm.
that the food bank interrelates with or that people could also be aware of?
Sure, that's a really good question. So there are a number of things that my position here at the food bank is seeking to address, a number of new programs that are being started this year and that are going to continue on into the coming years to help address hunger, food insecurity, food justice, the stigmatization of using food banks, and then food waste here on the island. But we also work with the Food Access Partnership, which is an organization that's fiscally sponsored by the Vashon Island Growers Association. And the Food Access Partnership has done a number of things over the past few years to help alleviate food insecurity in different ways. In particular, they've started a couple of different programs that supply residents of Vashon, users of the farmers market and users of Vashon farm stands, with more agency to buy locally produced food.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Right. You mean like at the farmers market, they have the token thing.
That's right.
Or there was also people who have, I think, what's it called when you have a food stamps, you're able to go to the market and exchange. Okay, all right. For everyone on this island who hasn't yet intersected with that, can you give us the quick down and dirty details?
I totally can.
Okay, go.
So there's two things that I want to bring up. The first is that the Food Access Partnership has one program where they distribute farm stand and farmers market coupons to different social service organizations on the island. And what those coupons do is they can be used at any farm stands or any farmers market farm vendor. And so they help to increase the ability or the purchasing power of folks who would not normally be able to buy those kinds of foods and produce.
Yeah, so if you are receiving food stamps, there's limits on what you're allowed to buy. You can't buy alcohol, things like that, cigarettes, whatever. You know, it's got to be certain types of foods.
But this is different than food stamps, actually.
Okay, but even for a person who did have food stamps, what I mean is that there's like both a limit on what you can buy, but there's also would be sort of the natural funneling into the typical system of go to the grocery store.
That's right.
And this is a way of allowing those people to say, hey, you get to also go to your local farm or the farmer's market or the grocery store.
Like, that's certainly true.
You're making sure that they have the same rights that the rest of us do to source their food where they want to source it.
Right. That's absolutely true.
Okay. Okay. I want to be clear. I was understanding it correctly.
No, it's totally easy to get them confused because the coupons essentially are used for the same things that our food stamp program can be used for.
Okay.
And so we call those our coupons or our vouchers, and they're distributed to different social service or agencies. And then those social service agencies like VOIFS, the food bank here, the BCC, can then choose to distribute those coupons to their customers or clients or users, however they wish.
Yeah.
And so, for example, the food bank, I think, received about $500 or $600 this year, might have been $700 actually, worth of coupons to then distribute to our customers to be able to then use at farm stands and at the farmer's market.
Right.
Now, our separate program is EBT match program, essentially.
Right.
And it is called Fresh Bucks. And that is a program that is used at a number of different farmers markets all throughout the Seattle area. And the Food Access Partnership was really instrumental in bringing that program to the island. And essentially what the Fresh Bucks program does is if you use your EBT card, if you are a person who receives SNAP benefits,
right,
which stands for Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, and you use your EBT card, which means electronic benefits transfer, if you use that card at the farmers market, you will then receive a match in Fresh Bucks of however much money you spend. So say that I wanted to spend $20 of my EBT money at the market. I would then receive $20 back in Fresh Bucks. And I would also receive $20 in farmer's market tokens.
Right, because you walk up to the farmer's market booth.
That's right.
Because all the farmers are not going to, they don't want to have to all be dealing with these little credit card machines. Mm-hmm. So you walk up to the lovely booth where these really sweet, lovely, awesome people, because I adore everyone who works there.
Yeah.
They're amazing. They say, hi, and you, how are you? And you're like, oh, I've got my little, it's my SNAP card, and I want to take $20 off my SNAP card. And they're going to run it through the machine, and they hand you back $40 worth of these two different types of
coupons.
That's
right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you're doubling your
purchasing power.
And on Vashon, the farmer's market, I would say in general when it comes to produce, is not double the cost of produce at Thriftway. So it's not like, you know, you're doubling it, but don't get ahead because, you know, it's more expensive produce. So actually, it's a great way of expanding your SNAP benefits
if you can
double through the program.
That's right. It's a great way of expanding your SNAP benefits so that you can purchase healthy, locally produced food.
Yeah.
And so you receive back tokens where you can buy at the market.
Right.
That you can use to buy anything that your EBT card would have been able to buy at the market.
Right.
However, you also receive back the Fresh Bucks. You can use them at farms or at the farmer's market. And what the Fresh Bucks represent is the ability to purchase produce only. And so with the tokens, you can purchase produce or any other kind of food that's not hot. But with the Fresh Bucks, you can only purchase produce.
Right.
And so
that's
what
the farm stands usually offer up.
That's right. And so it's meant to support our local agriculture, but then also to support folks who receive SNAP benefits to be able to purchase healthy food options.
Right.
Because when you go to the grocery store, you want to be able to use your SNAP benefits to the most of your ability.
Right.
Which means you're going to purchase cheaper options that have higher calorie content so that you can feed your family for less.
Right. And you might be going for also like larger quantities. So if you can buy in bulk, you know, but you're going for like, maybe the grains and the nut butters and
you know,
the proteins and the things like that.
That's right.
But we want to keep high fiber, locally produced, just harvested, nutrient-rich vegetables in our people's bodies as well.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly. And so that's exactly what the Fresh Bucks program seeks to do.
It is hard to sometimes get information out about these programs.
Totally.
Yeah, it's part of why I wanted to have you on the show, right? Wanted to get the information out.
Yeah,
Every
that's
time
why
I
you're so
hear
excited
about
to
this
come.
stuff, I'm like,
That's right, I
I
know. And it's really incredible because, especially on Vashon Island, most folks are so supportive of community-based programs. But it's true that a lot of social service agencies and organizations or clubs only have a limited amount of funds to be able to get the word out. And so to be able to come on a show like this is a huge help to me, to my organization, and to any organization that I can speak to.
So everyone, if you're listening to us right now in your car or at home on your radio on 101.9 FM, then you are listening in the first couple of weeks of January. And it's cold and blustery out there, and everything's asleep in the garden, and we just got through the holidays. And so there is always sort of this one thing every year that relates to societally, we seem to pay close attention to this issue when Thanksgiving's coming around, Halloween, Christmas, whatever. And then there's those months where people are not paying as close attention. They sort of forget about the issue. Tell us a little bit more about sort of those seasonal ups and downs and what you'd like to see people change in their perspective.
Yeah, that's a good issue to bring up. In relation to what I do for the food bank, I am starting new programs that are designed to bring in more fresh produce from on-island growers. During those winter months, it is much more difficult to procure fresh produce from the island or to receive donations from on-island growers. So in January, February, or March, December even, it's really, really beneficial to the food bank to be able to receive healthy food options. And so that doesn't just mean fresh produce, because that's incredibly hard to get during the winter months. But it also could be different kinds of freeze-dried options, frozen things, and then things that you can buy in the grocery store, of course. But fresh fruits and vegetables, especially green vegetables, are incredibly great and heartwarming to receive in December, January, and February, where people really love to receive those fresh greens.
You guys do a great job, I think, here on the island. And the nice thing is, I can actually say this as a person who participated for a number of months as a recipient from the food bank. I was endlessly amazed and glad to actually have this need in my life that actually got me in the door, because it was so impressive the quality of the food that was available, and especially, as you say, the fresh fruits and vegetables. And obviously, some of that is, being pulled from elsewhere. It's not like all gleaned at all,
That's
I
right.
mean, you're part of a whole, you're interconnected with a whole big system that exists in the Puget Sound area and whatnot. But I just was so impressed, really, really, really impressed. For people who maybe haven't paid close attention to this issue much in the past, we have a successful program here on the island, one that I think people can be really glad it's here. And yet, obviously, it can improve and get better. And everyone who I've ever engaged with is just unbelievably nice, smart, and resourceful. And then we have the volunteers, the really cheerful people who were like, hey, wait, I'm gonna go grab another box of apples. Because, I mean, I would come in, and not only did I have my own family, but I also had a lot of people who would come over, hang out, and eat while they were at my house. My kids have a lot of friends, and I'd just be like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love some more bananas, because teenage boys in particular love their bananas. OMG. And then there's the ones that love the pears, the ones that love the apples, and I'm like, okay, I can throw down like three apple pies. They'll be gone in 2 hours, but I can put those down, and so I was really, really impressed. I had the impression, although I haven't been in through the door in the city, I have an impression that maybe the inner city ones might not be as good as our market. I'm a little curious to hear how you feel we're ranking up there with some of the other markets in the area, or food banks in the area.
Yeah, so with food banks, we generally get a range of donations from a range of different kinds of organizations and people. And so, depending on where you are, you might have more access to grocery stores that can make weekly donations to the food bank. You might have more access to individuals who have the purchasing power to give to the food bank, whether it be cash donations or food donations. Or you might be in an area where you're surrounded by local farms, and the local farms and gardeners and orchardists can make regular donations to the food bank. And so here on Vashon, we have a food bank that does a great job of offering fresh, healthy options to our customers, especially during the summer months when farmers and on-island growers and gardeners and orchardists can make more consistent donations. And so
We're lucky by location in a
we're lucky by
way.
location in a way. And we're also incredibly lucky because we get lots of donations from individuals and residents on the island. And then we also get donations weekly from IGA and Thriftway, which make a huge difference.
And some of the bakeries. I mean, I recognize some of that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. The list could go on and on. If you can think of an organization that, you know, produces a lot on the island, then chances are they made a donation to the food bank.
Food justice, food waste issues, food insecurity, whatnot. I recently saw a video that was going around on Facebook. Wow. I really, you know what? I'm going to plug this guy. If I can figure, you might know who he is.
Okay.
Oh, am I going to find him? Oh, it's so hard to remember his name. He's like Polish. He has this really interesting accent. He wears glasses. He's got a big smiley face. And, he like recently came on the scene. So one of those people who's producing a lot of great content, but he's got this really interesting name that has, it's something like Nightshade or something like this. I don't know. And he's, oh my God, I'm going to just Google it. Isn't he great?
He's good.
He is.
Yeah, he's goofy.
And goofy, but the positive at the end, and then putting it back in your lap, wasteless food at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, share. I mean, it's he does a really good job.
And it was super easy to understand.
One of the big things out there then is the food waste side of things. I mean, I've seen a lot of different statistics ranging anywhere from like 40 to 60% of, you know, food produced in the country actually just ends up going straight to the garbage. And then, of course, we all know about farmers who are being encouraged by the for-profit food system to destroy crops in order to maintain the price, you know, in the market. And then you have all of the farm bills that support like the dairy industry by sending the dairy, you know, directly into the schools. And there's just all this stuff that's going on. And meanwhile, what people on the island here and in the area in particular care a lot about is the whole GMO issue, which aside from regardless really of the fact that you genetically altered an organism is the other side, which is that you altered it so that we can spray incredible amounts of chemicals all over our farmland in order to, you know, produce this food and not kill the plants we want while we're spraying all these chemicals. So the irony is that you've got Monsanto trying to make people believe that they're going to save us from hunger. And then you have the food industry, which is literally making a profit off of the destruction of vast percentages of the food we do produce. So in the middle of all that, we've got Sam Karp here in my studio ready to give us the answer to the problem.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
So like, food waste, you know? What are your thoughts and what are some empowerment pieces you can offer to our listeners around that issue?
When I was in school, like I noted, I got an emphasis in food waste along with the two majors that I had. And what my thesis was focused on was essentially why we waste food in our homes. And so we always talk about the purchasing power of the consumer and how we can change the minds of the larger corporations if we as consumers can come together and change the way that we purchase foods and redirect our purchasing power towards foods that are more sustainable, more ethically sourced, and support more ethical industries, more ethical corporations. And so here on the island, essentially I am starting up a few programs, all of which are designed to decrease food waste while increasing food security for those of us who face hunger in some way, in one way or another.
Right. So if I am wasting food in my life, I am essentially raising the cost of the food I buy. You know, people on the island complain about how expensive it can be to buy food on the island. But if you're wasting food at home, then you have to go replace that wasted food by buying more. So essentially, you're like, hi, forget that $4 a pound apple. I pay $6.50 a pound. You know, you're basically just raising your food costs by doing that.
Right. I mean, the easiest way to impact food waste on a national scale is to do it through your own purchasing power. And so limiting the amount that you buy and paying more attention to what you're doing with the food that you already have in your house and becoming more creative with the food products that you do already purchase, you can limit the amount of food waste that you have. And not only do that, but also save hundreds of dollars a year at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing my thesis, I think I came across a statistic that said that we waste about $1,400 on average in the American household on food that we don't eat,
mm-hmm.
Which is insane.
Where refrigeration is so popular and freezing right. is so popular. I mean, maybe right. food would be wasted if you couldn't refrigerate and freeze. Like, we can really preserve this stuff for a long time. Like, mm-hmm. you have to really forget your food for a very long time for mm-hmm. it to actually rot mm-hmm. in your refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
It's super true, especially with the GMOs that you're talking about. But one of the programs that I'm starting up on the island is a gleaning program. And gleaning has been happening on the island for a number of years. In particular, I'm thinking about there's an organization on the island, or a group of people, I should say, that glean food from farms and people's homes to then give to the local community church dinners. And essentially, we are trying to do a similar thing. However, we are trying to donate the food that we glean to the food bank and then also organizations on the island.
Is it Rotary?
The food. It's not the Rotary.
Okay, because
no.
they have Rotary First Harvest, which also does gleaning.
Okay, so Rotary First Harvest is actually the host organization that sponsors my AmeriCorps service.
Okay.
And so I have a direct link to them as well.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fruit club on the island that sponsors gleaning as well.
Totally.
All of the fruit, year by year, it changes slightly, you know, up years and down years. Mm-hmm. But, man, plums and apples
this year
just,
is crazy.
I mean, trees are breaking.
Yeah.
Like, we have a plum tree that literally split in three directions. It couldn't
really?
Handle the weight of all the fruit.
Yeah, that is
right?
unbelievable.
I can't, Mighty Hydrator can't keep up.
Yeah, it was an incredible
crazy.
Pollination year. I don't know what happened. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But that's right. So gleaning's been happening on the island for quite a while.
So that's an area of waste. Like, what you're saying is, when you think of food waste, most people think of, you know, my kid didn't eat his dinner, I'm scraping half the plate into the trash, mm-hmm. or we went to a restaurant and no one wants to watch the plates in a restaurant that are going back to the kitchen,
right.
you know, with half the salad and everything else that people didn't eat.
Right.
But you're also pointing out that food waste can be simply the local resources that, you know, someone's buying blackberries
That's
at the
right.
grocery store when they could have walked 29 feet away from their front
right.
door and picked the blackberries off of what they view as an obnoxious thing.
That's certainly true.
Right.
Yeah. Or perhaps you have a few different apple trees in your backyard. However, those apples maybe aren't quite to the quality that you'd like to eat them as they are
mm-hmm.
at the grocery store. Putting a little more effort into figuring out how you can preserve those apples or turn them into something that's incredibly delicious to eat is a great way to help decrease your food waste footprint. And so
right.
that's an issue that we face here at the food bank now. We've gotten so many generous donations of apples, plums, and pears
mm-hmm.
over the past couple of months from folks who had them in their yards.
For this year.
That's for just this year, because
right.
it's been such an incredible year for fruit on the island.
Yeah.
However, we face the issue of capacity because we
right.
didn't have enough storage capacity to be able to store all of that fruit for a long period of time. And so we had to get really creative and think about ways to preserve that fruit so that it would be more shelf stable for a longer period of time so that we could serve locally grown fruit to our
mm-hmm.
customers into later fall and winter months.
Right.
And so what we try to do is dehydrate that fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we have a couple of cider pressings
yes.
where we would turn apples into cider.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And they, I believe, Metal Creatures.
Yeah.
Has created some of those solid, like they're all metal steel rent, these electric presses.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. You like we bought a press.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we moved to the island 13 years ago. We bought our own press, and
mm-hmm.
then we met friends a year later who bought a home that had an orchard, literally. And they're
mm-hmm.
like, "What do we do with this?" And we're like, "Well, we have a press." So
yeah.
you know, we brought the press over, and eventually just lived at their house. And every year we'd get together, and
mm-hmm.
we would press so many gallons of
mm-hmm.
apple cider that I ended up getting a freezer at the Burton store
mm-hmm.
that I would just fill up with all of these
yeah.
bottles of cider, and then we'd pull them out throughout the entire year. My family was drinking fresh squeezed, unpasteurized, super healthy,
mm-hmm.
delicious
Basically
apple cider.
Apple cider.
Yo, yeah,
right.
exactly.
Yeah, and on the note of the metal creature, I have to do a quick shout out to Dragon's
yeah.
Head Cider, because Dragon's Head Cider, Laura
right.
and Wes were the ones who donated their cider press, their metal creature, to the food bank to use for this pressing event.
Oh, so nice.
Shout out to Dragon's Head Cider. Yeah,
yes.
Thank you so much.
Seriously, once you drink fresh squeezed cider, like, I don't think I'll ever buy a pasteurized bottle of apple juice ever
Does
again for the rest
different.
Of my life.
That is true. Yeah, that is certainly true. And I grew up in California and didn't have fresh squeezed cider either. And so coming to Washington and having it for the first time this summer or early fall was incredible. And that
Wasn't
very
it amazing?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
It was really, really
Completely
good.
Completely different.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Fear.
Mm-hmm.
Monsanto wants to use fear to motivate people, whatever, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, someone who's wants to sell you something, they want you scared, blah, blah, blah. And when humans are in a state of fear, they seek a relief from that feeling? Do you have, I don't know, like a couple, like a story or something that would remind people that even though the food bank is seen as being a place where people receive relief and aid and all that, and then we fall into the stigma issues and then all those things about class and whatnot, what are some stories or reasons why a person might actually say, I want to have a great day today. I'm going to go get involved with that organization and that group. I want to have fun today.
Yeah, that's funny because when I come to the food bank, I think about that sort of a thing a lot because one of the greatest resources we have here at the food bank is our volunteers. We couldn't do anything without our volunteers during the summer because of the Picnics in the Park program and other programs that we have. Besides just our regular distributions, we use about 80 volunteers along with our garden as well. And then during the winter, we still use about 40 to 50 volunteers every week. It's really a vast and incredible and dedicated volunteer network that makes up the majority of the labor that gets put into making sure that our shelves are stocked throughout the year. And it's because of that volunteer force that we really have an incredible community up here at the food bank. And one of the most special things about working here is that you get to know those volunteers. And what I've realized over the past year is that many of our volunteers and many of our customers come to the food bank for the community. They don't just come because there's food here that they can take, but because there are people here that they love to see, and they built it into their routine to come and have a conversation and check in on each other and see what's going on and joke about things and talk about things that are going on in their lives. And it's really a beautiful thing to see that we can sort of build community around an organization that has historically been stigmatized for many, many years for many different ways. And so that's been a really heartwarming journey for me and a really amazing discovery, and is really going to be one of the main reasons why I will continue working in food security and food relief for the rest of my life.
Yay. I'm so glad that you came to the island for all the different reasons, and that I got to meet you and my friends meet you. It's been a real pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Yeah, well, ditto, March. I'm glad to be on the show.
All righty. So I have this really interesting video that I have seen produced by a gentleman who goes by Project Nightfall. Weird, sort of interesting name, but he's amazing. He's just amazing. He produces these videos that will go through Facebook world. You can find them on YouTube and whatnot about really all sorts of different issues, and he just presents them in a great way. So one of them is titled, Are We Wasting More Food Than We Eat? So I just want to encourage people to look that up. You can, it went through Facebook a couple months ago. The, when I looked it up on YouTube, the one I'm seeing was just posted recently, but this has been around for a couple of months and it's just phenomenal. It's been all over the place. Definitely went viral. And he just does a really, you watched it with me. He just does a really great job, I think, of making the issue accessible. He leaves you with a feeling, like you said also, about how much empowerment we have with regard to just not wasting food at home. And so check that out, people, if you want just a fun, enjoyable four-minute video. It's, I can't even explain why he's so enjoyable. Just trust me, it's worth checking out. And then you came in today with... You pointed out to me something going on in Tacoma called Hilltop Urban Garden or HUG. I love it. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Hilltop Urban Gardens was an organization that I worked with very briefly when I was in school in Tacoma. And essentially, they are an amazing example of an organization that seeks to relieve food insecurity and hunger and build food access to locally grown produce while also building community. And so they're located within the Hilltop District of Tacoma, which is just about a 15-minute drive from the ferry. And essentially what they seek to do is to turn urban spaces into gardens. And so Dean, who is the leader of the program over there and who started it all a number of years ago, recruits folks who have underutilized yard spaces in the Hilltop District to turn those yard spaces into gardens. And so if you walk past the Hilltop Urban Garden, you will also see a number of homes whose front yards and the spaces beyond the sidewalks have been turned into gardens, of which the food is then used to feed different members of the community in different ways.
So it's almost like guerrilla gardening, only it's legal.
That's right.
And, yeah.
Incredibly organized.
Right. I remember when I lived in the suburbs, when we first moved up here for the first time in my life ever, I actually lived in a modern, created suburban community over in what was called at the time Redmond, but now it's the Sammamish Plateau. And they literally created individual areas where, like, all these houses were the same housing plan, just flipped one direction or the other in the $250,000 range. And then they had over here the $300,000. And then here were the 350s. And here were the fours. And it wasn't like a suburb that was created 120 years ago, you know, where each house was unique and different. This was really created suburban living, right? And all of the trees, people would say, oh, this is a cherry tree. And I'd get so excited imagining cherries. Oh, it's a plum tree. Oh, it's this or that. No. These were all the trees that had been biologically engineered, not necessarily GMOing, but, you know, actually created to produce flowers, but not bother us with the fruit. Because who wants the fruit landing on the sidewalk and then you have to like sweep it up and it gets all over your shoes? And I literally spent about a year and a half living in this community and just floored that people had worked so hard in the horticulture world to create fruitless fruit trees. Right? And then everyone had their lawns, you know, and everyone in the community told us about the guy Joe. He and his wife had owned the house for 6 years from when it was built to like the beginning of it being built to when we bought it. And literally everyone in the community, all they had to say about Joe, and I'm not joking, literally was, well, you're so lucky. You have the best lawn in the neighborhood. Joe must have spent 20
Oh
hours a week on
no.
that lawn. He was always out there taking care of it. You are so lucky. Let's just say I gave him like the big-eyed, oh my goodness stare, you know? And so it was really interesting. I would look around and think, what would this neighborhood look like if every yard was full of fruit-producing trees and vines and grapes and all this, and if all that land was a bunch of raised beds full of all this amazing food? And I thought, we wouldn't even have to go to the local grocery store to buy food more than like once a month if we all had these giant gardens.
Yeah,
So
it's
that's
really
what they're
true.
doing there in Tacoma, the Hilltop Urban Garden, is sort of reclaiming the land for actually producing food and not just being the sterile environment.
Right, and to introduce you to your neighbors because growing food and eating food is one of the greatest ways to build community.
It's a fun thing to do when you're human.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's
eat
right.
together.
Most people like it.
Like we go to restaurants to do this all the time. Why not do it in the front yard with our neighbors?
Right.
Okay, and then you also mentioned a book called The Third Plate, which is written by Dan Barber, who has this interesting background as as an amazing chef and this restaurant and everything. And he for people who want don't have maybe time to read the book, but if they want to, they can go to Netflix and check out this show called what?
Chef's Table.
Chef's Table, and one of the episodes of Chef's Table is focused on Dan Barber. Okay,
Just one.
so people can go check out that one if they want to learn more about him, and he speaks for himself, whatnot. But he wrote a book. Tell us about this book and why you love it.
Sure. This is an amazing book, not only because it's easy to understand and read and because it's incredibly entertaining, but it also speaks to a very pertinent issue that is widespread across the country and the rest of the world today. And that is both food waste. But also the improper use of our agricultural land. Dan Barber speaks to the industrial food system. He speaks to how the restaurant industry has impacted how our growers produce food. And then he speaks to the solutions of that issue. And so he goes around and interviews a variety of different chefs and growers all across the country and then abroad to sort of get to the bottom of this issue and how we can progress to see a change in our food system, both that is better for people to consume the food that is being created, but also for the environment.
Okay, I love that. you know, cause and effect, right? Such a and it, so here's something interesting. A lot of people right now are thinking about what's going on with plastic straws, right? And so we all have seen the picture of the straws being like, you know, pulled out of the poor turtle's nose, you know, and we see the dead albatross chicks that couldn't survive, and they cut open their belly, and it's just full of all this garbage that mom thought was food. And so we understand that's going on. And then one day it hit me as I was thinking about straws, and I'm like, because people are like, this is a big deal. There's like these videos about learning how to drink out of a cup. And I'm going, okay, wait, human beings drinking out of cups since the beginning of time, since the first oyster shell was used to capture water. And I'm like, okay, when did we get, where did straws come from? Mm-hmm. Fast food industry had to have drive-throughs, and people in cars would be like, well, I can't take that cup of soda. So they learned how to put a lid on it, but I can't drink it because now it's got a lid on it. So you put a straw in it. I could be wrong, mm-hmm. but my best guess is that the straw industry exploded mm-hmm. specifically because of fast food industry, and that it was that type of eating that started 70-some-odd years ago mm-hmm. that literally created the straw industry.
Yeah, it's my guess that you're 100% right. And the fast food industry also had a huge impact on our agricultural system and why we grow the foods that we do and why the government subsidizes the food that it does compared to other foods.
Right.
That's another issue for another time.
Yeah. I know. Okay, right. Yeah, so The Third Plate by Dan Barber. Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, good. I wish we had more time.
Me too.
Share this interview forward. Sam has so much amazing stuff, obviously, to present to listeners everywhere. So please help us get all these thoughts and ideas out into the world. And thank you so much for listening today. Sam, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Marge.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found a sea of green.
Submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine.